every organization, really, from the tiniest startup all the way up to, you know, huge global companies, faces this really interesting challenge. How do you consistently take those great ideas, those sparks, and turn them into, well, consistent, repeatable success? It's not just about having the idea for a, quote, better mousetrap, right? It's about actually getting that mousetrap made and delivered and making sure customers love it time after time, reliably. So today, we're doing a deep dive into something that's often overlooked, kind of the secret sauce behind it all, process redesign and optimization. We're going to unpack why even something like a symphony orchestra, which our source material actually mentions, needs really robust processes. You know, from the score itself to every musician's cues, they need that structure to truly inspire an audience. And, well, businesses need that same kind of structure to inspire their customers and deliver value consistently. Our mission today is really to explore how these effective, efficient processes form the backbone, you could say, of both day-to-day performance and, maybe surprisingly, breakthrough innovation, too.
Yeah, and what's really fascinating here is the depth of insight from Michael Baer. He's the associate professor and, well, very seasoned executive featured in our source. His career path is pretty amazing. It goes from designing like advanced aircraft engines at GE,
wow,
all the way to being a CEO and COO in finance, tech, manufacturing, you name it. So he really gets the nuts and bolts of how things get done and, crucially, how they can be done better. We'll be looking at his definitions, his strategies, and maybe importantly, his warnings about how processes can sometimes actually get in the way of innovation.
Okay, so let's kick things off right there. If we're talking about processes,
mm-hmm.
What is a process exactly? And how is redesigning one different from, say, optimizing it? They sound related, but I'm guessing there's a key difference.
That's a great place to start. And yeah, it's fundamental. At its very core, according to the source, a process is, well, simply a set of tasks and activities. These tasks take inputs and produce outputs. Think of it kind of like a recipe, maybe. You've got your ingredients. Those are your inputs. You follow the steps of the tasks and activities, and out comes your finished dish, your output. Now, that distinction between design and optimization, it's really critical. Process design, or sometimes redesign, answers the big question, what does the process do? It's about building that fundamental flow, that recipe, either from scratch or maybe rethinking it completely. Process optimization, though, asks something different. How well does the process do what it's supposed to do? This is more about fine-tuning that recipe for, you know, key performance, making it faster, maybe more consistent, maybe less wasteful.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Building the car versus tuning it up for the race.
Yeah.
So once we've got that basic structure, that design,
yeah,
how do we make sure it's actually a good one? What makes a process truly effective?
Well, good process design really has to be grounded in measurement and facts. You need both. It's about being able to, you know, objectively compare different ways of doing things and make decisions based on data, not just gut feeling.
Right. No guesswork.
Exactly. And this is where a whole toolkit of methods comes into play. You hear terms like Six Sigma.
Oh, yeah, the buzzword.
Right. But don't just think buzzword. Think of it as a really rigorous, data-driven way to hunt down defects and variations to make things consistent. Or process mapping that's literally drawing out every single step to see where the kinks are, the bottlenecks. We're also talking about things like root cause analysis, finding gaps, understanding what customers really value, even brainstorming, and importantly, change management techniques. Beyond those tools, though, there are two really critical aspects, flexibility and trade-offs. Flexibility is about whether a process can handle multiple things at once, like can one production line make several different products, or can it adapt quickly when the business environment shifts, because it always does.
So like a conductor adapting a score for a different concert hall or soloist. The business process needs that adaptability too. And those trade-offs you mentioned, that sounds like where the really tough strategic choices come in.
Absolutely. Trade-offs are all about balancing things like cycle time, cost, and quality. It's a balancing act. For instance, if you push really hard for faster cycle times or you slash costs dramatically.
Something's got to give.
Exactly. You'll probably have to accept a different standard for quality. It's this delicate dance, like a chef deciding, do I make this dish in 5 minutes or an hour? The quality will obviously be different. You just can't maximize everything at the same time.
It's fascinating because we often talk about efficiency being the main goal of good processes. But how do these, you know, well-oiled machines actually add value and enable innovation? Sometimes it feels like they could just become rigid and actually stifle creativity. How do they speed things up?
Well, the crucial first step is figuring out value from the customer's perspective. What do they really want? What are they maybe not getting right now? often, you know, innovation doesn't have to be some radical disruptive thing. Sometimes leaders get so focused on chasing that big disruptive innovation that they miss the obvious improvements sitting right there. The insight here is that innovation can often just be about doing existing things better, or maybe just differently.
That's a really powerful point. Can you give us an example where just doing something better through process innovation led to a real breakthrough?
Absolutely. Some of the best, most impactful process innovations happen when a team takes something that works super well in one place and figures out how to adapt it somewhere completely different. Imagine, say, one office in a big company is just crushing it at bringing in new customers, way better than all the others.
Okay.
When the leader of that star office shares exactly how they do it, maybe it's their onboarding process or how they collaborate internally or their follow-up methods, that knowledge can lead to better processes across all the offices. And when you standardize those best practices, make them universal, that translates directly into better results for the whole organization. It's not a new product, it's perfecting the delivery.
Okay, so good processes are clearly vital for that kind of scaling and improvement. But can they ever become a problem? Can too much structure, too much process actually slow down innovation or, I don't know, block it entirely?
Oh, they absolutely can. Yeah. From a tactical viewpoint, innovation can definitely get stuck if the basics aren't right. Like if roles aren't clear or resources aren't managed well, if schedules are too vague, or if you're not tracking those really critical path activities.
The make or break tasks.
Exactly. Those things that determine how fast you can possibly finish. Another really common issue is just leaders trying to change too much all at once. It's like trying to rewrite the orchestra's score while they're playing. It just creates chaos. And then strategically, processes can block innovation too, maybe if they're not really aligned with the overall business strategy. Or, and this is interesting, if the critical tasks aren't being done by the right people. It turns out the people who are brilliant at designing a process aren't always the best ones to actually implement it. They're different skills.
Oh.
And if leaders don't recognize that, don't appreciate those unique skill sets and match people correctly, you can waste a huge amount of time, effort, and money.
That's a really crucial point about the different skill sets. What about collaboration? You always hear collaboration is key, but I've also heard whispers that too much of it can actually be bad. What does the source say?
Yeah, you're hitting on something critical that honestly a lot of leaders miss. Our source points out that while, yes, everyone talks up collaboration, too much of it, excessive collaboration, can easily lead to groupthink.
Right, the echo chamber effect.
Precisely. It's that silent killer where everyone wants harmony, so they stop thinking critically. It just squashes individual ideas. And that's a huge enemy of successful implementation and definitely of innovation. The counter technique suggested is pretty clever. Have the design teams explicitly invite senior leaders to come in and challenge their ideas.
Oh, interesting. Like a structured critique.
Exactly. In a structured, constructive way. It provides that invaluable outside perspective, gets vital feedback. And really importantly, it builds high-level buy-in sponsorship for the changes. It stops things getting stuck in that, you know, collaborative rut.
So, okay, for the project managers, the leaders listening, once you get all these dynamics, how do you actually do it? How do you go about optimizing a process? Is there a practical kind of playbook?
Well, the source lays out several key questions that really form a practical guide. First, clearly define the process's purpose. Why does this thing even exist? It's amazing how often that's fuzzy.
Yeah, go why.
Second, how are you going to measure success? And what are the specific thresholds? What does good look like exactly? Third, what are those trade-offs we talked about? Quality, cost, service, cycle time that you're consciously willing to make. You have to decide. Fourth, what tests will actually verify your changes work? And how are you going to mitigate the risks involved? Fifth, will the outputs vary? How do you account for that variability? And finally, maybe most importantly, how do you prepare for the implementation itself, the rollout? You know, seasoned project managers, they're always thinking ahead. Weeks, even months out, they actively look for those internal champions, people who can help push the change through, and they get them involved early.
Get buy-in from the start.
Exactly. They anticipate the roadblocks, they're ready to make corrections midstream, and they develop backup plans, mitigation strategies for risks. They even think about creative alternatives or maybe pre-approved exceptions before they're even needed.
We hear so much about metrics in business. How do they specifically fit into this optimization playbook? What's the best way to actually use them?
Oh, they're absolutely essential. Leaders have to establish clear performance metrics, not just to measure progress, but also to track it over time and, crucially, to reward it. People need to see the connection.
Right, makes sense.
And a really effective technique, according to the source, is conducting demonstration pilots, maybe even a series of them. Use these pilots to validate the new concepts in a controlled way. This does more than just prove the idea works. It also helps calm down skeptical teams, you know?
Shows them it's not so scary.
Exactly. And it helps those mid-level managers build confidence and trust with the senior execs by showing, look, we ran this pilot, it worked. It builds that track record, builds belief.
Okay, let's talk technology. It always gets presented as the, you know, the magic wand, the solution to everything. What role does tech really play in process optimization? And is there a catch?
Tech can definitely enable and enhance optimization in lots of powerful ways. On the project management side, you've got tools for tracking ideas, planning activities, monitoring progress, managing resources way more efficiently.
The logistical stuff.
Right. And then for the actual content of the project, tech helps with things like robust cost-benefit analysis, detailed process mapping, even simulating different flows to see what works best. It can help pinpoint bottlenecks and really optimize efficiencies in ways that are hard to do manually. And of course, automation, or even semi-automation, of those really labor-intensive processes, that's a huge win from technology. It can slash cycle times, cut costs significantly, and maybe most importantly, ensure consistent quality and repeatable precision. So overall, yeah, technology can vastly improve the design phase and speed up implementation, saving a ton of time and effort.
It sounds almost too good. I'm sensing a big but coming here.
You sensed right. There's a really vital caution from the source. Beware of relying too heavily on technology.
Ah, okay. Why?
The big danger is that businesses can lose flexibility. They get locked into the limitations of whatever tech they're using now or in the future. So if business conditions change substantially, and let's face it, they always do, and the tech infrastructure can't keep up.
You're stuck again.
You're stuck. Organizations can really struggle to respond to what customers need next, and they might miss out on critical new opportunities because their systems are too rigid. It's easy to build a cage you thought was a castle.
That is a crucial warning. So you've got all this potential strategic alignment, smart optimization, helpful tech. What's the biggest, most common hurdle leaders actually face when they try to launch these kinds of initiatives? Is it the tech?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it something more human?
It's absolutely vital to prepare for and really understand the nature of change itself, and maybe even more critically, the inevitable resistance to change. The source points out something interesting. Process redesign ideas mostly came out of manufacturing.
Right, assembly lines and stuff.
Exactly. And when you take those concepts and try to apply them in non-manufacturing places, service industries, creative fields, you name it, leaders are just much more likely to hit that wall of resistance. And the irony is, people often know. They know there are better ways to do things. They see the problems, the inefficiencies every day.
Mm.
But fear often stops them. Fear of taking a risk, fear of failure, sometimes even fear of just speaking up and communicating that they want change. It's a classic human thing.
Mm.
We want things to be better, but inertia is incredibly powerful.
So given that inertia, that basic human resistance, what does a leader actually do about it? How do you break through that initial reluctance and fear?
Well, the source is pretty clear. There is probably no better use of a leader's time than helping the organization prepare for change, period. This means, first, clearly communicating the purpose, the why behind it all. People need to understand that. And then providing all the resources needed to make it happen. Support, training, time. Employees watch their leaders like hawks, especially their nonverbal cues. So leaders absolutely have to walk the talk. They need to be visibly engaged.
Not just announce it and disappear.
Definitely not. They need to explicitly link people's performance objectives to the successful implementation of these changes. They need to put their best people on these initiatives, not just whoever's free. And they need to be actively involved, steering the teams, constantly communicating the plans, the goals, the progress. This active, visible involvement, it's not just about getting buy-in. It's actually a crucial part of the innovation recipe itself. It's how you build real innovation capability in your organization over the long haul.
Wow. What a journey through the mechanics, but also the deep psychology of processes. We've seen that consistent top-level performance and real innovation. They aren't just about one brilliant idea popping up.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about the strong, flexible, constantly improving processes that hold everything up. It really is like that world-class orchestra, isn't it? The amazing music only happens because of all the meticulous practice, the performance processes, the constant refinement.
Yeah, absolutely. It boils down to those key ideas, doesn't it? Good design, make sure you deliver efficiently. Optimization means really understanding customer value and making smart trade-offs. Tools like clear communication, those demonstration pilots we talked about, they boost your chances of success. And maybe above all, that commitment, that active leadership from senior management is absolutely crucial to get past the biggest hurdle, that natural human resistance to doing things differently.
And so, as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with a final thought to maybe mull over something drawn right from the source material's wisdom.
Yeah, considering everything we've talked about today, take a moment and ask yourself this. Are your organization's current processes truly doing what they're supposed to do? Are they doing it really, really well? And maybe the most critical question, are they genuinely set up to let you embrace new opportunities and respond effectively to whatever is coming next?